From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Texas 83rd legislative session is set to begin. What's the mood like under the Capitol Dome heading into this new dawn of lawmaking?
The focus has shifted from tearing down government to delivering what it needs to deliver, but in a more efficient fashion.
And will ethics reform even be on the table?
Yeah, I think there is some hope, at least around the margins. The Sunset Commission has recommended some improvements in campaign finance disclosure.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Tuesday, January 8th is today. The Texas legislature will be sworn in and the clock starts. The Texas House and Senate are given 140 calendar days to come up with a balanced state budget and fix the problems that have been troubling Texans. The last session was a testy one with a Republican supermajority in the House. Conservative lawmaking was the order of the day. This time, Republicans are still in control, but no longer a supermajority. And there are some, like Quorum Report's Harvey Kronberg, who are hopeful that this session will distinguish itself as one being dedicated to problem solving.
Obviously, the economy has been robust, and I think we've all been pleasantly surprised by the tax revenues that have been collected, but we still have some bad checks we have to cover from the last legislative session, so it's going to be rather interesting. The odds are that we have enough money to pay all of our prior obligations, and then we're left with how we intend to use the rainy day fund money. Some folks think that the rainy day money will be used to cover all of last session's overhanging objections, and that we'll actually have about $7 or $8 billion extra dollars other than what we anticipated.
So is there more of a positive attitude? Because 2 years ago, we knew we were going into a big deficit, and cutting and slashing was going to have to happen. People were saying, use the rainy day fund, and then they never did, except to cover the bills from the previous session. So where are we now?
The most significant change is that the anger has largely evaporated. We elected a freshman class in the Texas House last cycle that came in angry and not traditional political personalities. They were not connected with their local schools, hospitals, nursing homes in the way that most people who are elected to the legislature are. And they were perfectly happy to make these draconian cuts. But the election that just took place, while there's more than three dozen Republican freshmen in the Texas House, and there will be 95 out of 150, these folks have a significant number who have been on school boards, who have been businessmen in their communities. And while they're very conservative, they're much less ideological. I think that it's going to be more about problem solving than it is about just gratuitous cutting, which is what the threshold was last time.
So going into the session, we can usually look at the pre-filed bills to see what's on the mind of the legislature. And first thing pops out at you is that there certainly are a lot fewer of them than there were 2 years ago.
That's pretty fascinating. But if you're somebody who's run against government in the past or think that you want to downsize government, there's most folks don't have especially the freshmen didn't come here with a big legislative agenda. There's less unfinished business, particularly for conservatives and social conservatives, than there has traditionally been. And Democrats know that if they've got a legislative package, it's most effective for them to file with Republicans down the road, with Republican co-sponsors. The few number of bills that have been filed is surprising, but when you look at the composition of this legislature and the mood of the legislature, it makes sense.
2 years ago, during this session, there were a lot of pre-filed bills having to do with immigration, illegal immigration. Representative Debbie Riddle had even camped out on the steps to be first in line to file her bills, and none of those have materialized this time. The sanctuary cities law that didn't get passed was deemed an emergency bill 2 years ago, and now it's not even on the radar.
Well, of course, Republicans have had an epiphany in discovering that future of any level of power is going to require Hispanic participation. And certainly on the national arena, all that opposition to immigration reform has essentially evaporated among the leadership. It may not have evaporated among the rank and file, but that general anger and anti-Hispanic attitude that characterized the last legislative session, I think, is going to be reduced. Remember, there was a concerted effort by a number of conservative groups in Texas to elect African-American and Hispanic Republicans to start changing the face of the Republican Party in Texas. And they were, to some degree, successful. So I expect to see some border security issues, and I certainly think there'll be a sanctuary city bill, but I don't think they are going to be quite as rabid as they were previously. And on top of that, I would add one last thing, and that is the voter. We'll probably end up with a voter ID bill, but we had two federal panels, one on redistricting and one on voter ID, that said that the Texas legislature appeared to have acted intentionally to discriminate against minorities. And those kinds of slaps on the wrist may not penetrate to every member, but they do leave an impact.
Well, it's interesting to look back 2 years ago and see what happened, because we didn't have a mind wipe. We need to look at what they called an emergency bill, and was it truly an emergency bill, or was it just an emergency political maneuver? And is that what's happening again going into this legislative session? Because we're seeing the things that Rick Perry has wrapped his arms around are the drug testing for people who are on family assistance and who are on unemployment. And also he is big on supporting these restrictions on abortion.
4 years ago, we had almost an even tie in the Texas House of Representatives between Democrats and Republicans. So a very conservative agenda was impossible to happen when you had 76 Republicans and 74 Democrats. So 2010, the governor put all the unfinished work of the social conservatives on the table in his emergency calls. There's a lot less unfinished work after the last session. So he's having to look hard to find issues that resonate with the conservative base that could be weren't able to accomplish last. So he's probably going to do something with the fetal pain bill. He's probably going to do something with the unemployment insurance. But for all of the emergency issues that they passed last time, it didn't help him in his presidential efforts this time. It's going to be curious to see. It's an ongoing debate whether he's actually running for president or not. But my suspicion is that we may see a pat-down bill added into an emergency call, but there's not going to be quite as much written.
Pat-down bill, what's that?
Oh, that's a bill that gained notoriety in the last 6 weeks of the session, where people were objecting. In particular, David Simpson, a House member from Longview, brought up a bill that said that airport security could not do pat-downs.
So this is the anti-TSA stuff?
That's correct.
Now,
we may see something like that emerge, one last bloody fist at the federal government emerge as an emergency bill.
So Rick Perry, it was about this time last year that his campaign was put to sleep.
Certainly anesthetized.
and then David Dewhurst, you know, he didn't do so well either, trying to become the next senator from Texas. And he lost to Ted Cruz because he wasn't conservative enough. And we have Speaker Joe Strauss, who has been labeled a rhino, a Republican in name only. And even though it's highly likely he's going to be made speaker again. So we have three of these guys who are basically the, you know, the gang of three in Texas, all trying to prove that they are conservative through and through. And they're going to try and prove it through the legislature.
I would say that we have two of the three are in a political rehab right now. The governor obviously got his hand slapped in the presidential nominating process, and David Dewhurst lost an election that he should have, by all calculations, have walked away with handily. Strauss is actually stronger in his institution than he was previously, while arguably Governor Perry and Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst are weaker. I think they both took away different lessons, but we'll see how this plays out. For Governor Perry, tacking hard to the right might be useful in a Republican primary, but it was the kiss of death when it came to the actual general election. So how you navigate that remains to be seen, and his political consulting staff is no longer with him. So I'm not sure who's giving him advice right now. But 2 years ago, his longtime group of advisors were saying tack hard to the right. to get ready for a potential presidential primary. He doesn't have a consulting team now. David Dewhurst drew the exact opposite lesson. His wrist was slapped because the Texas Republican primary rebuked him for not being sufficiently conservative, which is astonishing on his face, but be that as it may. And he has said, I'm going to make this will be the most conservative Senate ever. But the senators are a very independent group of people, and while they are conservative, certainly the Republicans are conservative, I'm not sure they're going to follow where he wants to lead.
Well, 2 years ago, the Senate, as the session was wrapping up, we saw a lot of activity of changing of the rules on the fly in order to benefit the Republican passage of bills and some outraged Democrats. Do we pick up where we left off, or is it a tabula rasa?
We're all kind of waiting. There's a lot of jockeying going on inside the Republican caucus right now as to whether we're going to have a two-thirds rule or a simple supermajority rule of 60%, which is essentially what the United States Senate uses. We are waiting to find out whether we have not seen the smoke signals yet to tell us if they're going to do what they call special orders, which essentially mandates that the Senate take up a bill regardless of whether or not they've got two-thirds or 60%. But the attitude of some Democrats is that if you're going to play those games, let's just get rid of the entire two-thirds rule or 60% rule. You know, they're essentially calling their bluff, because the truth is those rural Republicans need to be able to block things that work almost exclusively to the benefit of the suburban Republicans. They're probably going to end up siding with the Democrats on that.
What good is having a two-thirds rule if it can be blown away whenever the leadership says, I don't like it?
Or majority of the Republican caucus comes out. But the good news is that the Senate doesn't really act as a caucus. The House last session was more caucus-driven than I probably had ever seen them. But one of the reasons that we're not as dysfunctional as D.C., we don't impose caucus discipline on all but a handful of gut check votes in the Texas House and Texas Senate. These folks generally are much better about thinking in terms of their representing their districts. Very rare that there's any kind of discipline that is exercised on somebody who doesn't follow the caucus lead.
Looking at some of the bills that were pre-filed to the session, education's coming up a lot, particularly in regards to dialing back the standardized testing.
Right. Yes. Isn't that interesting? Educational accountability has proven to be at one point it was an organizing principle for Republicans. Now it's become the exact opposite, and they can't move fast enough to try and reduce the significance of these tests and certainly reduce the number of these tests. They'd want some kind of accountability, but we've really wrapped ourselves up in knots inside the educational community with all of these these tests, and there's a rebellion among Republican base vote on it. So I suspect we're going to see that dialed back. I'm just not sure how significantly it will be dialed back.
Very unpopular, the STAR test and all these standardized testing. And it's also a big part of the school finance lawsuit, saying that the legislature has mandated the passing these tests, but they haven't provided the resources for these schools to do so. So will the slow walk away from the standardized testing be also a reaction to what they fear will be a negative ruling on this school finance lawsuit?
Well, I think we're going to have the litigation pointed to constantly on almost every facet of the public education debate this time. The legislature, knowing that they rarely do anything significant on education without threat of a court order, is probably going to punt on a lot of things. But I am fairly convinced that they are going to reduce the footprint of testing in public education, because that's one thing that people shout at them over at PTA meetings and town hall meetings. So.
Another big education fight was school choice or giving more public money to charter schools. Dan Patrick he's the senator who's way in favor of this, and he's in charge of the education committee, and looks like we're going to be seeing big changes here.
Yeah, difficult to judge what kind of legs this has. I think the Republican caucus in the Senate is going to be divided, and I certainly know the Republican caucus in the House is going to be divided on this. Rural legislators believe that anything that takes money out of public schools is bad news for their folks back home for a whole variety of reasons. And the probable chairman of the House Education Committee is going to be probably be a rural Republican. And so even if the senators can figure out something they can sign on to, it's going to require, there won't be any, I don't think there'll be any Democratic support for it in the Senate. There's going to be big obstacles in the House.
Well, the naysayers say that if Dan Patrick gets his way, it would be the end of public schools as we know it in Texas.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think that's overstating it. The issue had always been if you take money out of public schools, you end up directing it to schools that are much less accountable, that can cherry-pick their students, et cetera. At least in the first blush of what we've seen him propose, they've done a different method of funding it, but they haven't changed the outcome of taking money away from them.
Essentially, it would be like a pot of money is assigned to each student. If they can decide to go to a public school, or they can take that pot of money with them and go to a private school, a parochial school, or charter school.
Correct.
Or even be homeschooled.
It's certainly been long held Republican orthodoxy, but Republicans are not united behind that.
So do you have any sort of feelings about what the mood is going to be for this legislative session? I mean, they can be different. You know, sometimes they can be productive and we can take on some of the big problems of Texas, and sometimes it can just be a massive, you know, sideshow.
As I said previously, I don't think that this session of the legislature is nearly as angry as the last session, which is not to say that it's not going to be driven by conservative principles. But last session was unsatisfied or unfulfilled wishes of social conservatives. I think that there is an appetite in both the House and the Senate to start working on bigger issues. So, for instance, 2 years ago, a group of Tea Party types could stop any debate about how to deal with water issues. They could essentially stop any debate about anything related to expenditures. I think they're going to be much more marginalized this time, and legislators are much more in tune to their districts than they were 2 years ago.
That's actually hopeful.
Yes, I am actually hopeful. I think that Joe Strauss in the House has broad support. Now, the House is still going to be a rowdy place with lots of surprises. I think that it is not a mob of people with pitchforks looking to tear down government, which was how you would have in many ways you could have characterized last session in the Texas House. It is a bunch of people who have needs back in their district that need to be in some way satisfied, and the challenge is going to be how to do it without spending a whole bunch of money. But the focus has shifted from tearing down government to delivering what it needs to deliver, but in a more efficient fashion.
Harvey Kronberg is the editor of The Quorum Report, an online newsletter dedicated to covering Texas politics. It's online at quorumreport.com. Ethics reform is always an item that political watchdogs put on their wish list for an upcoming legislative session. To call Texas campaign finance laws Swiss cheese would be kind, but sometimes there are big campaign donors who get so careless they can trip over even Swiss cheese. And that's what happened this week to mega political giver Harold Simmons of Dallas. The Texas Ethics Commission ruled the billionaire broke the law in setting up a sham political action committee, and he was fined a whopping $6,450. Texans for Public Justice is a political action group. They found the violation and filed the complaint. Craig McDonald is the director of Texans for Public Justice.
We thought the line was a meager one at best. We had filed a complaint against the Waste Control PAC. Waste Control is owned by Harold Simmons, of course. Their political action committee formed last year, and we discovered that it had given out about $65,000 in campaign contributions, yet it had not met the standard of the law to create a political action committee. When we looked into it, we saw that the sole donor to the political committee was Harold Simmons himself, who had given the PAC just over $100,000. And under Texas law, that's illegal. If you have a PAC, you have to have at least 10 donors. The reason for that, Dave, is that you can't allow one single donor to try to hide his identity or obfuscate his identity behind a sweet-sounding pack. This pack was called Texas Solutions. No one would ever know it was a pack created by waste control specialists, which operates a hazardous waste dump in West Texas and has been trying for years to get permits to expand that dump to include nuclear waste of all sorts. It now has the permits to include nuclear waste. Well, we filed a complaint against the PAC because, again, it did not meet the legal standards to create a political committee in Texas. That complaint went to the Texas Ethics Commission, and it took about 11 months to resolve it, which is the standard amount of time for a complaint. And they found, of course, that the PAC indeed had violated the law, as we claimed they had, but fined it a meager $6,400. We wanted the fine to be more in the nature of what they had spent illegally, which was $65,000 instead of $6,400. So we were quite disappointed in the fine. We were glad to see that our complaint had merit and that the Political Action Committee was indeed admonished. But again, the fine is just doesn't send much of a strong signal. It doesn't send a deterrent signal. The Ethics Commission had the ability to fine the PAC three times the amount of the misspent money, which would be almost $200,000. And so, again, we were disappointed in the fine. We were glad our complaint was exonerated, if you will.
So we're concerned here is that the amount of fine was so small that this is not a deterrent for anyone else to try and do something like this in the future. Was this done in a very sloppy way and that there are people who are more crafty about doing these things that we don't hear about?
Yes, I think that's true, exactly. It probably was some sloppiness on behalf of waste control specialists. If you understand the law, it doesn't take much of a campaign finance attorney, and there are some good ones up here in Austin, to set you straight and to do this legally. So it wasn't the concept wasn't the money that went to these lawmakers. This could have been done legally a whole different number of ways. The question was the PAC trying to, or did it try to hide the identity of the donor, Mr. Harold Simmons? And if it did so, it didn't do a very good job of it. And again, that's the purpose of the law. The law says if you create a political action committee, it just can't be your own personal bank account and give it a fancy name so people can't track the ultimate source of the money. It has to be a committee made up of real people, and at least 10 of those people. And so that's what the PAC did wrong. So we weren't concerned so much about the money that flowed to the candidates, although $65,000 is a good piece of change. We were concerned about the issue of transparency. And was Harold Simmons and waste control specialists trying to get around the transparency elements that are now in the law so that citizens can understand, can view, can easily see who's paying for their politicians? That's what concerned us. And again, we do think the fine of $6,400 to Mr. Simmons' PAC, Mr. Simmons, who is a billionaire, he's the second largest donor in Texas politics, that a fine of $6,400 is not much of a deterrent.
Do we know how they came up with this fine, the ethics agency?
No, because their proceedings are really behind closed doors. We file a complaint. The only updates we get are that every quarterly we get an update to say it's still pending, hasn't been resolved. And then at the end we get a letter that says it has been resolved, and if you want to make it public, you have the ability to do so. But we don't see the behind-the-scenes negotiations. It's not like an open trial. That agency, the Texas Ethics Commission, which is the agency in charge of a disclosure of campaign contributions, is going through what we call a sunset review process right now, which means the legislature is taking a hard look at its operations and activities. Good government groups and watchdog groups such as ours have been arguing that the enforcement process, that is the process this PAC just went through, ought to be open to the public. It ought to be like a trial. We ought to be able to sit in the room, see the witnesses, see the evidence, just like you can in any other civil or criminal trial. But you can't right now. It's a closed process. And it's a difficult process because The agency itself is run by eight commissioners appointed by the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker of the House, and it takes a vote of six of those commissioners to get any business done. So we're kind of thankful that six of the commissioners thought that Harold Simmons PAC had done something wrong. But again, we're disappointed that the process isn't more open so that journalists, watchdog groups, average citizens can sit on, in on these proceedings and, again, evaluate the evidence for themselves and see their government at work.
So we're going into a new legislative session. Is there any hope that there's going to be a toughening, an ethics reform that will take hold?
Yeah, I think there is some hope, at least around the margins. Through the sunset process that's been going on for almost a year now, the Sunset Commission has recommended some improvements in campaign finance disclosure. They haven't gone as far as we would want them to or most watchdogs want them to. One of the great weaknesses in Texas disclosure is that our office holders' personal financial disclosure forms, which are due annually, and those forms disclose where the official's money comes from, where their earned income comes from, how many stocks they own, whether they're in other partnerships. It really discloses a great deal of financial information, even though that what it does disclose isn't complete. Texas has always kind of kept those a little bit hidden. To see your own member of the legislature's disclosure form, you have to travel to Austin physically. You have to sign a form saying who you are and whose form you want to see. It's kind of a practice from the 1920s or 30s, if you will, where it's somewhat intimidating, and again, you have to disclose who you are before you can look at it. We want those forms to be put online. We think a public record these days, if there's a public government record that by law is open to the public, it ought to be available on the Internet. And if it's not available on the Internet, you can't really call it a public record. So we're hoping some improvements in the disclosure of both the campaign finance transactions, but also a legislator's personal financial information will be available online. So anyone who has access to a library or modem or a computer at home can access that information. We're hopeful that will go through, but not confident.
Whenever the legislature begins in Austin, we hear about how poorly paid the lawmakers are, and that's kind of given as an excuse for sometimes there's a spillover between campaign money and their living expenses in Austin and stuff. I mean, isn't there a big fix needed to take care of all that?
Oh, I think there is a big fix, and we have always advocated a fix that doesn't seem to have much political popularity, both within the legislature and across the general public. But we think that fix is to make our legislators full-time legislators. That is, many of them do work almost full-time right now. They have other side jobs and law firms, and that brings in all kinds of conflicts of interest. The way to get the conflicts of interest out of the system and to make sure that their campaign contributions aren't supporting lifestyle choices. Right now, campaign contributions pay for cars, they pay for dinners, they pay for all kinds of travel. To stop those conflicts of interest, we think we should make our legislators full-time legislators, working for the public and the public only. And to do that, you have to pay them a decent salary. But I think the legislators themselves have been reluctant to move to such a system, and I think some polls don't really support that. Though if people stop and think about it, having them not on the dole of private interests, but having them working for the public interest with public money, all of it disclosed, is likely a better system.
Craig McDonald is the director of Texans for Public Justice. The government watchdog nonprofit uncovered the ethical campaign donation violation by billionaire Harold Simmons. McDonald is hopeful that the new legislative session will usher in tougher ethics rules for Texas political leaders. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. We'd like to hear from you, so send those emails to texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs online for your listening on our website, tpr.org, and we're on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.